The conversation surrounding climate change is ongoing. Melting glaciers and sea ice are affecting the global climate, causing issues for communities around the world. In the Arctic, sea ice is melting and the opportunity for shipping along the Bering Strait is increasing, and in turn creates a higher potential for pollutants. Human traffic also causes new issues for marine mammals. This can then impact Arctic residents who depend on subsistence harvesting. This youth report on marine traffic in the Arctic is produced by Alaska Teen Media Institute with help from the World Wildlife Fund. We'll travel to Golovin and Wales, Alaska villages along the Bering Strait, to talk with residents about how climate change is affecting their homes. We'll hear from government officials about the impacts of melting sea ice, and researchers will tell us about their efforts to study the Arctic and document areas that are only recently accessible. I'm Kendall Stormo, and I'll be your host. Steady changes in Arctic conditions create subsistence lifestyle challenges. As many know, residents of remote Arctic communities have relied on the land and the sea for thousands of years.
The first thing I was told and taught since I was very young is to respect nature, respect the animal. Don't waste them.
Clyde Oxrock is a resident of Wales, Alaska, which is the westernmost city within the mainland United States. The village was a settled area due to its location along migratory routes of game animals and sea life. Oxrock started hunting when he was around 8 years old. Through this, he learned the importance of hard work, physical stability, and the value of nature.
And respect the weather. Don't taunt the weather. Don't challenge the weather. That weather, the environment's going to always win. You have to be humble to the weather. You do anything else you want, but you have to be humble to the weather if you want to survive.
Being aware of weather is important when determining when to go out hunting and when to return. But climate change is making it more difficult to predict what the weather will do. One result of the rapidly changing weather is that it's making hunting more dangerous than ever before. These changes in weather bring hazards for some and opportunity for others. ATMI spoke with Wales and Golovin, Alaska residents and World Wildlife Fund's Elizabeth Kruger, who works with communities in the Arctic. They share stories of how these changes are impacting people, wildlife, and business. Here's youth reporter Quinn White.
It's early April and about 40 minutes by snowmobile, or as Alaskans say, snow machine, from Golovin, Alaska. I'm with a small group of local residents, and we're assembled to hear the ocean like we've never heard it before.
All right, you guys ready for this?
Yeah.
But first, Golovin resident Jack Fagerstrom tells me how he and other Inupiaq hunters have methods for hearing life under the sea ice.
If you can hear the reverberation through your boat, or other people use an oar, stick it on, put your oar in the water, in your paddle acts as a sounding board thing, something that the sound will bounce off of.
But today, Fagerstrom's friend and neighbor, Toby Anungazuk Jr., drills a hole in the ice using a battery-powered auger. While Elizabeth Kruger, who works for World Wildlife Fund in the Arctic, helps Golovin student Casey Williams drop a hydrophone into Golovin Bay.
All right. Are we on? Are we rolling?
Yep.
We good? Here we go.
It's ready to drop it in the hole.
Using headphones, students will be able to hear what bearded seals and bowhead whales sound like firsthand. These beeps and whistles create a symphony of the marine mammals that migrate north to forage in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas each spring, before going back south each fall. Bowhead, beluga, and gray whales. Pacific walrus. ringed, ribbon, spotted, and bearded seals, and occasionally polar bears. Golovin is the first of two stops on our World Wildlife Fund trip to explore how all these sea mammals may be affected by increased ship traffic in the Arctic. Our second stop, Wales, Alaska, sits along the Bering Strait. Only 50-some miles of ocean separates Wales, a community of about 150 people, from mainland Russia. Roy Kamanasiak, a subsistence hunter in Wales, is seeing more traffic in the strait than ever before.
We have just this one stretch of water, and we just have this one channel, and it's basically like a highway, a mammal highway out there.
But marine mammals are no longer the only ones using the Bering Strait to get where they need to go. The strait is the only waterway that connects the Pacific and Arctic Oceans. And as sea ice melts, potential for shipping expands, and more companies are expected to use the Bering Strait as a shortcut between Europe and Asia. There are two new routes ships can take to travel through the Arctic. When traveling from Europe to Asia, a ship can go around Russia and cut through the Bering Strait. Or, rather than passing through the Panama Canal, a ship can go around the state of Alaska through the Bering Strait. Both routes can cut days off a ship's journey. While this saves both time and money, it does increase risks and the amount of noise in the region. Residents in remote Arctic villages depend on the hunting of sea mammals to survive. Marine mammals use sound underwater to communicate with one another, or to detect objects and hunt for food. Kamanasiak tells me more about the ancient technique for hearing these sounds that has been passed down through generations.
Just grab your paddle and lay it next to a chunk of ice. You can even turn the paddle, hear the different pitches as you turn. It's like you're turning away from the noise or you're turning to something different.
Clyde Oxrock, also a resident of Wales, Alaska, has similar experience.
You wouldn't think you could hear sounds underwater through wood, but if you put a paddle in the ocean and put the end of it on to your ear, you will hear the sounds almost like a microphone. You'll hear a lot of sounds you wouldn't think you could hear through a piece of wood.
We're back above the ice with World Wildlife Fund's Elizabeth Kruger. It's totally silent, and there's seemingly nothing for miles around. All I see is ice.
I always have to remind myself when I'm out on the sea ice that I'm standing on water. It doesn't really feel like you're over water. And so you're kind of looking at this black and white world where the only sounds you can hear on top are the sound of the wind a little bit and the crunching of your boots.
Kruger drops the hydrophone into the Bering Strait. In her Anchorage office, Kruger thinks back about the hundreds of thousands of marine mammals that utilize the Bering Strait.
There are such enormous concentrations of marine mammals going through that choke point, and that's also the only route that the ships can use to get from the north down into the Pacific. And so if the timing were right, it has the potential to impact entire populations of marine mammals that migrate through that small choke point.
Kruger says noise pollution in the ocean can impact marine mammals in two ways.
You can have chronic impacts from a background level, similar to walking down the street in New York City, say, and you've got a ton of noises happening in the background, and it might interfere with your ability to communicate with other people or to think, or your stress levels might be impacted. That's a similar scenario for marine mammals underwater with a lot of background noise from something like shipping.
Marine mammals can also suffer from sudden hearing loss due to human activity.
The other way that sound can impact marine mammals is in an acute sense. So you have, if there's, for example, seismic testing where you're creating explosions in order to see what's going on under the bottom of the ocean, that has the potential to actually cause physical damage to the ears of a marine mammal. And so it can cause all sorts of complications for hearing, and it can even lead to death.
In 2017, the U.S. Coast Guard completed a Bering Strait Port Access Route Study, also known as PARS, to give ships safer routes and to minimize the risks of potential disasters. The International Maritime Organization adopted these measures in 2018, so today they are international law. There's more to be done to make Arctic shipping safer for ships, wildlife, and people as the planet warms and sea ice continues to recede, including a Coast Guard study for the waters of the U.S. Beaufort and Chukchi Seas currently underway. For Alaska Teen Media Institute, with support from World Wildlife Fund, I'm reporter Quinn White.
Thank you, Quinn. We're hearing some more of the hydrophone audio from Quinn's time in Wales. We recorded this sound in April when sea mammals were migrating north through the Bering Strait. To hear more of this rich soundscape, visit alaskateenmedia.org and click to our youth reporting project titled Marine Traffic in the Arctic. With a population of 145 people, and a long history of subsistence living, Wales residents are committed to preserving their culture and traditions for generations to come. Earlier, we heard from Clyde Oxrock. He talked about how respect for the environment is crucial for survival in the North. Frank Oxrock Jr. is Clyde's brother, and his love for hunting brought him back to Wales after he graduated from high school. Now an elder himself, Frank has witnessed great change.
My whole life, I've never seen open water like that. You know, when I first saw that, first ones I thought about was my elders, my uncles, my dad, you know, my grandmothers, my aunties. They would say, what they would say, some of them would be scared because it changed so fast. Sometimes I can't believe I've lived through these things, you know, and actually see the changes.
We gotta be pretty cautious when you're out on the ocean of the weather. Changes. Weather seems to turn bad quicker, and the game we chase, say we gotta go further to get them.
I know that last time they went out hunting, they had to be real careful because the ice is not frozen like it used to be, and they gotta be real careful for them to go out, because they could easily injure themselves. It used to be nice and thick and strong.
Personally, I know a few elders who have died, just because of different warmer climate, unsafe ice. The climate change warming is good in some places. It's not good for us. We're used to certain ways of doing things. I've heard it said that winter has suffered at the expense of spring. and fall. And we've also suffered.
These are the voices of Golovin and Wales, Alaska residents who struggle with the dramatic shifts to their way of life that come with melting sea ice and changing weather patterns. The Coast Guard PARS study Quinn reported on earlier aims to protect rural Alaskan communities that continue to live subsistence lifestyles while acknowledging the new opportunities open waters bring for shipping through the Arctic. Traversing the opening Russian and Canadian Northwest passages in the Arctic has allowed ships to travel to their destinations faster and easier than ever. However, increased traffic also carries with it potential environmental impacts that may be detrimental to an ecology that has never been exposed to man-made travel before. Alaska Teen Media Institute's Rowan Pickard takes us back to the Bering Strait, the stretch of water between Alaska and Russia being affected by climate change.
The Bering Strait, 50-some miles of water that separates Russia from Alaska, connecting the Bering Sea to the Arctic Ocean.
Over the years, we've seen more tugboats and ships that pass by because we're right on the Bering Strait.
This is Ellen Richard, a resident of the Alaska Native Village of Wales. Melting sea ice is a massive development for ship travel. Instead of going through the Panama or Suez canals, ships can now travel straight through the Arctic Ocean and the Bering Sea during the ice-free summer and fall.
So it makes it a shorter trip to where they want to go other foreign places.
The Arctic Ocean's Beaufort and Chukchi Seas are two massive bodies of water that have been primarily frozen until recently. With this opening of new routes, areas such as Barrow Canyon, a boundary between the two seas, are now exposed to new forms of ship traffic. Barrow Canyon is what's known as a submarine canyon, with depths that can reach 1,200 feet.
So the movement of seawater comes in and it hits those really steep walls and that seawater shoots up, and so that mixes up everything. So you've got everything just sort of mixing in there. You've got a lot of sunlight coming in from above. That creates really good conditions for plants to grow. So that sort of brings all of that wildlife to this one specific area.
Ben Solander is a spatial ecologist for Audubon, Alaska. Spatial ecology is the study and understanding of a landscape using maps. Audubon began collecting data to map the Arctic Ocean in 2008. Environmentally sensitive areas along these routes are home to 80% of seabirds that nest in the U.S. and to millions of marine mammals. Solander gives his perspective about how ship traffic can affect the ecosystem in the Arctic.
Any vessel, any large vessel, is going to bring a lot of impacts into that area. So some things are like the risk of an oil spill. Like if a ship hits a rock, hits a coast, like their engine goes kaput and they just start to drift into shore, there's a really high potential for an oil spill.
It would take days before a proper response team could get to the Bering Strait. The closest Coast Guard station is located down in Kodiak, an island sitting in the Gulf of Alaska, which is over 760 miles from the Bering Strait. Jack Fagerstrom is from Golovin, another Alaska Native community near the Strait.
Where are we going to get our oil spill response from? You know, it's like, I don't know what to compare it to. It's like maybe the end of the world as we know it, as the song goes.
Transportation Specialist David Saris of the U.S. Coast Guard, stationed in Juneau, Alaska, talks with us about the changes in the north and what we might expect for the future.
I mean, you really got two primary Arctic shipping routes. There's a northern sea route that would go over the top of Russia, and there's a Canadian Northwest Passage that would, you know, take you to the Atlantic Ocean.
While smaller ships have sailed the Arctic before, the Crystal Serenity was by far the first luxury cruise ship of its size to sail the route in 2016. Starting in Anchorage, Alaska, the cruise ship sailed the Northwest Passage above Canada, making stops in Greenland until it reached its final destination in New York City. With only 10% of Canadian Arctic water surveyed at the time, the U.S. Department of Defense assembled multiple agencies to be prepared in the event of an emergency. Solander's work to map the area helps him and others understand the environmental impacts that not only affect sea life, but communities in the Strait as well.
We see a ton of, you know, the cruise traffic in Southeast and how that changes community. That brings in a lot of jobs. That also brings a lot of challenging conversations about, you know, what do we do? Can a community of 200 people support cruise ships bringing tens of thousands of people per day?
Clyde Oxerock of Wales talks about what he thinks traffic through the Strait could mean.
I think shipping would do a lot to help the population of humans, but I think it would be detrimental to the migration of a lot of species. We already have enough boats and noise pollution in the ocean already, and it's just going to increase. A lot of these whales and most of the whales, they depend on sonar to migrate and to navigate. That being said, how will our excessive noise pollution affect their sonar and their navigational abilities?
Solander gives clarification as to what can happen to marine life when commercial cruises or other ships sail routes that may affect the area.
So this is still a super new area of study, but what you can do is you can like watch a whale and see how it responds. What you'll see a lot of times is the whale swims away, so that's sort of avoidance. Other times the whale isn't able to move away in time, and you do see things like ship strikes, where a ship runs into a whale straight up. And there's a lot of evidence that we see of whales that get hit and survive, but there's also a ton of whales that don't make it.
With ship strikes as one of the leading causes of death for whales worldwide, the Coast Guard has enacted special zones in areas like the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic, with dedicated speed limits to avoid collisions that can be fatal to wildlife and humans alike. The Great South Channel, a body of water that connects the Gulf of Maine and the Northwest Atlantic Ocean, becomes an area to avoid for any ship weighing 300 gross tons or more from April through July, as baleen whales migrate through the channel for the summer. Saris and the Coast Guard are taking some steps to aid navigation and prevent collisions.
So the project that we're focused on is this port access route study, and it's intended to identify if there are particular shipping corridors that need to be established to prevent vessel collisions. And in the case of our situation here in Alaska, there's certainly environmental areas that it might be best if we steer ships away from those places.
Recommended navigation rules detailed in the Coast Guard's completed Bering Strait Port Access Route Study, also known as PARS, were adopted in 2018 by the International Maritime Organization. This creates a system of two-way routes that establishes basic and voluntary rules of the road for domestic and international ships and does not limit commercial fishing or subsistence activities.
It's almost like if you're driving on a highway where you stay on your side of the highway and the other person stays on their side of the highway, and there's less chance that you're going to run into each other. And then as you come to intersections or places where that route turns, you know, you got to pay a little extra attention there as you're executing that turn to make sure that, you know, this is a place where, you know, another ship might also be turning, and gives you an idea to kind of pay a little more attention to your situation with respect to other vessels that might be in your vicinity.
Gullivan resident Toby Anungazuk Jr. has some advice for those planning to travel through the area.
First of all, I'd ask them to not burn that heavy fuel and stay within their shipping lanes. And the biggest thing I wish for is that there's no rust buckets.
The Coast Guard also partners with NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The organization aids in gathering data, mapping unmarked oceanologic areas, and tracking weather patterns. Saris says this enables ships to traverse the dangerous waterways in a safer manner.
So we're working with the National Ice Center and with NOAA and trying to figure out, you know, what are the ice conditions going to be doing moving forward? Is that a factor that we need to take into consideration as we, you know, look at what's going to be the best route for ship? Are there areas that are going to be more predominantly ice-free as opposed to others that might not be? There's a lot about that area that we don't have a lot of experience operating up there, and so we're not intimately familiar with the nuances of the weather patterns and ocean currents that tend to have ice accumulated in certain locations and not in others.
Sarah says the Arctic Port Access Route study is still in development, and individuals and communities can send their comments and concerns to the Coast Guard, where they will take information to make sure the Arctic Ocean is safe for people, wildlife, and shipping traffic.
So we follow, you know, it's a public process, just like if the agency was going to create a regulation, although it's not a regulation. It could lead to a regulation, but it's not a regulation in and of itself. So we publish a notice of study in the Federal Register.
The open comment period is open until June 30th, 2020. Partners conducting the studies will travel throughout the Arctic to present findings and gather additional concerns that need to be taken into account. For Alaska Teen Media Institute in Anchorage, with support from the World Wildlife Fund, I'm Rowan Pickard.
Thanks, Rowan. Born and raised in Nome, Alaska, Austin Amasik noticed the effects of climate change at an early age. He currently works as a marine advocate for Kuwerik, a regional tribal consortium for the Bering Straits region, and considers himself a subsistence and environmental advocate.
Our people are at the front of climate change. Right? We're at the very front. Our elders talk about, you know, things that they haven't seen before, which causes alarm, okay? So just in real simple terms, alarm. That is how it's described. Obviously, the first thing that stands out is things like coastal erosion and loss of land, you know, loss of area, you know, loss of community, land space, which certainly impacts infrastructure. As the Arctic warms, right, you know, shipping is increasing, everything's getting bigger, right? The ships are getting bigger, the shipping community is extending the time frame when they're shipping. The impacts are also getting bigger, right?
The long-term impacts of climate change in the Arctic are unknown, but government agencies, nonprofit organizations, and businesses can help mitigate the risks by adopting more environmentally friendly practices. The public can also weigh in. Again, the United States Coast Guard is requesting comments for the Port Access Route Study titled Alaskan Arctic Coast that they published on December 21st, 2018. The comment period is open until June 30th, 2020. This youth report on marine traffic in the Arctic is brought to you through a partnership between Alaska Teen Media Institute and the World Wildlife Fund. If you'd like to listen to these stories or the sounds of the Bering Strait again, they're available at alaskateenmedia.org. Search Marine Traffic in the Arctic. Thanks to Alaska Teen Media Institute youth reporters Rowan Pickard and Quinn White. Thanks to our mentors, Rosie Robards, Cody Liska, and John Kendall. Thank you for listening. For Alaska Teen Media Institute, I'm Kendall Stormo in Anchorage.